Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. Her websites, jugglingdynamite.com and venablepark.com. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, thank you, Jim.
Danielle, will real interest rates continue to rise long after the Bank of Canada has stopped hiking rates?
Yes, so they're rising right now. So even though the Fed and the Bank of Canada have been on hold since July and haven't tightened any further in terms of nominal rate increases, the fact that the rate of inflation has been falling from 8-9% back in the summer of 22 to recent readings more in the 3-4% range, what that really means is that the after inflation cost of interest rates has risen, even though central banks haven't been hiking further. And the Bank of Canada, for example, has predicted that they will get to their target in terms of the CPI, the 2% target, sometime by the end of 2024, early 25, so a year from now. But the point is that if their current overnight rate is at 5% and they get the CPI back to 2, that means you've got a real rate, the difference between the two, of 3%. And that's very expensive because long-term, the average real rate in the United States, for example, has been 0.89%. So when you have a current spread about 2.4%, that's significantly almost three times higher than the long-term average since 1971. So what that really means is that wages don't continue to increase because they're typically correlated somehow with the CPI, the cost of living. So things like rents and wages are not going to be going up as much. And then that means that the cost of capital, this current rate regime, is going to be that much more unaffordable or difficult for people who are looking to borrow or are already indebted. So it just puts an additional squeeze. And this goes back to things we've talked about many times, Jim, which is this lag between changes in the overnight rate and how it impacts the economy. Of course, they start changing the overnight rate because they're concerned that price inflation is too high. Invariably, it takes some time, but over 12 to 24 months, the increases in the rates that they bring about do effectively slow the rate of inflation. Then if they continue to keep rates too tight for too long, they end up in a recession, which is the most typical outcome of these hiking cycles. And that's the very reason for that is because there's these lags, they front load all these changes, and it doesn't really show up in the economy for 12 to 24 months later. In the meantime, job losses start to increase. And that's the ultimate lagging indicator, is the unemployment rate, which is what ultimately sends central banks back to trying to ease conditions then. But again, it'll take some time for the easing efforts to filter through the economy. So it's really ratcheted up the stress on an economy that is dealing with record indebtedness. And we're starting to see that fall through into a slump in consumption, not just in North America, of course. China is a huge part of this story. As you no doubt are aware, China's been really stumbling in terms of its growth outlook for the last few years. There was a great assumption that after COVID, they would reopen the economy and everything would be going gangbusters again, kind of like it was pre-COVID, but the fact is that the demand picture in China has just continued to weaken for much of the same reasons that Canada has been in a malaise, because we, like China, were very centered around the housing boom that happened during the ultra-low rate environment. So Canada and China really overbuilt their housing stock by borrowing at next to nothing and getting companies and households to lever up and try and then they've got this whole system or regime of different levels of government encouraging borrowing and getting compensation to officials based on how much credit they get uptake in their, municipality or province. So there's a lot of incentives in the system to try and get more debt and more debt finance growth. But, China really hit a wall on that. And now that we've got higher rates, you're seeing that their economy is slowing even more. China's official GDP forecast is back to around 5%, which may sound great, but it's almost half of what it was at the peak of the last cycle in 2007-8 when, many Canadian companies were, celebrating what they thought of as insatiable demand for certainly for commodities that China was gobbling up to create all these goods it was exporting to the West, as well as all these properties it was developing at home. So when we saw that sector started to get into financial distress over in China, in late 2021, they started to have bankruptcies of some of their major developers. And then, of course, we've had a disappointment after disappointment since. The consumer there is very much stressed out, over-allocated to real estate, which ultimately is counterproductive. It's not productive to have most of the capital stock of the country going into building out shelter. Shelter is essential, but it's not sufficient to drive productivity gains or healthy growth in an economy, because in and of itself, it doesn't create income streams. It just creates shelters, right? So especially when prices got so high, the income streams were insufficient. The rents have not been enough to cover the cost of carry. So it's really been this very negative force. So the Chinese stock market has slumped back to where it was in 2005, Jim. It's amazing if you look at a chart. I remember so vividly the China mania that went on in the 06 to 08 blow-off top when commodities were all going through the roof and people were forecasting that China was going to become the world's leading economy and overtake the United States and, just nothing but like sunshine and roses. And, of course, that was peak euphoria, and it has disappointed profoundly since. So what we are seeing there is that the interest rates are turning back down in terms of the bond market in China. The 10-year Treasury price there has fallen back to the lows that we saw in April of 2020 and 2008 before that. So that's recessionary levels. And then the People's Bank of China did a overnight cut to their interest rates this week in the hopes that that would re-stimulate uptake in credit. But it's kind of like in Canada where the household and companies are just up to their eyelids in debt already. So, it's just very difficult for them to take on any further debt. And don't forget, most of the debt in the economy was taken out at that ultra-low rate period. So when rates were, sub 2%. So the fact that they're now, fixed mortgage rates are now around 5.5% in Canada, variable rates around 6.25%, that's come off the peak about 1%. But it's nowhere near stimulative because it's still, 2 and 3 times what people had been borrowing at. So that really is all suffice to say that the economy continues to struggle and that the impact of higher rates is going to be felt for a significant period of time.
We'll have more with Danielle Park right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Danielle Park. What do the economic numbers besides those from China tell us, say the 10-year Treasury rate?
So what's happened you know, the Bank of Canada kept its rates at the flat, didn't make any changes to its overnight policies at its meeting this week. It did forecast, however, looking forward, that they expect Canadian GDP growth to be less than 1% this year in 2024. And we know that we already had a couple of negative quarters in the second half of 2023. So we were already weak and anemic coming into 2024. And the Bank of Canada is essentially stealth saying they see stagnant growth for the next year and maybe growth less than 2.5 in 2025. So it's a pretty anemic outlook here. And the yield curve seems to agree, because the U.S. 10-year, 2-year spread, for example, so this is where, you know, the bond market basically sells off in the long run so that interest rates rise when it thinks that the central bank is going to be tightening too much, and that really portends increases quickly the rate of the cost of capital in the economy. And then when it feels like the economy is slowing too much or significantly or at risk of going into a contraction, bonds rally again, and that brings the long yields down. So that's been happening in America and Canada since since the fall of 2023. At max inversion, where the short rates were much higher than the long rates in the economy, max negative spread was in July. Last summer, the U.S. 2-year spread was negative 1.08, so 108 basis points negative. And as of recently, as of today, it's about 0.16. So in other words, it's almost flat, the yield curve now, on its way to becoming positive again, meaning that short-term rates are going to be less than long-term rates, and that will end up being a positive positive curve. So all of that is just the reason we should care is that yield curve re-steepening always leads job losses, and it's the re-steepening that signals the onset of the worst part of bear market losses. So that's why people should care. Far from a soft landing where everyone can say, oh, they tightened so much and the economy's fine. That's all backward-looking data. We know that the governments have been making the lion's share of jobs here. Again, the yield curve re-steepening leads to job losses, and that's precisely what we're seeing right now. You know, the job losses, job cuts are just coming fast and furious. Just in the last few days alone, you've got, bellwethers like IBM saying they're going to be cutting jobs, eBay, Microsoft. The tech sector itself has laid off more than 20,000 people just in this month, just year to date, Jim. And Paramount announces today that it's going to be laying off people. So basically what happens here is that companies are noticing that fall off in their sales. They're noticing that they're getting less revenue. And so what they do is they respond by cutting their overhead, cutting their costs. Don't forget, companies also have a much higher cost of capital because interest rates have risen as well. And so this is really crimping their profit margins. And so what they do typically is they slash their overhead in order to try and maintain their profit margin in a falling sales environment. But the next part of that is, because they're laying people off and cutting jobs, you get less consumption in the economy. And that ultimately circles back around into less sales. So it sounds like, you know, when they start cutting the jobs and the overhead to try and boost their profits, it seems like a short-term win for the company. And sometimes you'll even see the share prices rally on the news that, oh, good, they're cutting jobs. That means profits will be preserved. But the next leg of that is that sales are hurt further because less people are working in the economy. So that's what we're starting to see now. U.S. unemployment is only at about 3.7% official unemployment, but it was a low of 3.4 in April of last year. Canadian unemployment rate is about 5.8 versus 4.9 in July of 22. But typically in this next phase here, you're going to see an increase of 2 to 3% typically during a recession and a decline in earnings, the average earnings of companies, by more than 20%. And during recession, sometimes you'll see 20 to 50% declines in the earnings of major corporations. So all of that is just to say that there's going to be further risk of declines in the stock market, in corporate debt, because none of this has been priced in yet. And, you know, you get a bunch of major bellwethers like DuPont warning that they see the weakest outlook for sales since 2008. Another one was 3M, which is, of course, major chemicals, warned on mixed industrial demand and slowing consumer spending in China. So they, you know, their shares promptly fell 14% and 11%. Tesla, of course, is having to do a lot of reinvestment to build out the cheap model that they've been meaning to bring out next, which is the Model 2, which they hope to have around $25,000 a unit. But they have to stop making some of their other more popular models to invest in this. So their shares are down about 13% just today. It's just sort of like, because it was priced for perfection in terms of the stock pricing and unrealistic expectations of the economic climate we're in, when these companies come out with these warnings about the future prospects, the response in the stock price is pretty negative.
Danielle, anything else we should be keeping a close eye on?
I just think people should keep some cash and be aware that we're in this phase where job losses are going to pick up, and that we should see that continue for the next year potentially, and that the stock market never bottoms before the central bank has been into the cutting phase of interest rates. We're not there yet. So, you know, even if they start slashing rates mid-year, which is the current outlook or forecast, it's very likely the stock market could continue to sell off over the next year and beyond. So it will make a bottom. There will be an opportunity for reinvestment. A wild card is the U.S. election in the fall and whether Trump gets another term, all that sort of stuff. But in the meantime, the risks are very much to the downside, and people should see that as an opportunity in the future. But to get there, you have to protect yourself and have some cash available.
Danielle, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Hey, thank you.
My guest has been Danielle Park, editor of the popular blog Juggling Dynamite and president of Venable Park Investment Council Incorporated. If you have any questions for Danielle or for any of our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com, HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.